You know how many people died so you could have the right to vote?
I was voted most likely to succeed.
Vote for me.
People's votes will actually mean a lot this time.
What you do inside the voting booth is a secret.
There's something very sexy about voting.
You gotta vote.
Get out and vote.
Go vote now. It'll make you feel big and strong.
TSN 1200.
And actually, when you vote today, by the way, you're supposed to BYOP, bring your own pencil or pen. They'll have some there, but they're encouraging people to, and you got to wear your mask, and you got to bring your own pencil, okay? But make sure you get out there. Polls open 9:30 this morning, open until 9:30 tonight. Election day here in Canada. We got a Monday night football game for you tonight, Lions and Packers. By the way, home teams so far through the first 31 games, 2 weeks of the NFL season, are 15 and 16 below 500. And this is with full fans this year, which is unusual to say the least. And of course, we're looking forward to the next Red Blacks game coming up Wednesday, the rare midweek Wednesday home game. Hamilton Ticats in town for a very key battle. There'll be some new faces in the Red Blacks lineup. Presumably, they brought some in last week to find out all about it. We welcome, as we do each and every Monday morning here on TSN 1200, head coach Paul Lapolis to the show. Good morning, coach. How you doing this morning?
I'm great, thank you.
Good. We don't have a game to talk about from the weekend, so we can only talk about your new players. And so let's get some timetables from you first of all, and let's start with the highest profile guy that was signed last week, and that was quarterback Duck Hodges. Kind of give us the 411 on if he's arrived in town and when you'll be able to get him at practice and when you hope to maybe be able to get him into a game.
Duck is, I talked to him last night. He's in the city. He's in his quarantine. So he's got a quarantine for 7 days, and then we'll get him out of quarantine and get him on the practice field and get him sorted out. I get he played in the NFL and, you know, like he's had some opportunities, but we just got to make sure we lower expectations and that, like, he's not going to start when he shows up the first day. Like, he's a good young player that we've had, the personnel department's had their eye on for a long time, and he's had a great college career and, was fortunate to get some NFL playing time. So somebody want to get in the building, start teaching our systems and our offense.
Coach, the first thing I loved hearing is he wants to be here, which is so important. But in your experience, what are the biggest obstacles for quarterbacks to overcome coming up from the U.S.?
I guess one big thing that a lot of people always don't understand about our league, or when somebody sends me a player, I guess they don't understand the fact that you throw the ball up here so much. It's, it's usually 70-30 or, 65-35 throws to run. So you have to have a guy who's very accurate as a thrower. So if you have somebody, like, a lot of times people say, hey, there's a kid, he's pretty athletic, he can run around on your big field, but, he's not the best thrower. Well, that's great. He can run around on our field, but you got to throw it, almost 70% of the time. So that's, I think, the biggest obstacle for guys. They got to be accurate. And a lot of times guys come up and just don't have the accuracy.
And his college numbers in terms of accuracy were very good. 2 years, 4 years as a starter, 2 years well above 60%, and 2 years above 70%. So that's encouraging. Why do you guys think potentially he'll be a good CFL quarterback?
Well, certainly the thing you just said, he's got a very high completion percentage. He has a high touchdown to interception, very high touchdowns, very low interceptions. He's got some mobility and certainly been successful, in his college career, right? Like, this is a guy who started a lot of football games. Is a thing I always like when I'm evaluating quarterbacks is, have these guys played a lot of games? Matt Nichols was a 3-year starter at Eastern Washington, broke almost every passing record. Sometimes we get a guy, well, he started for 9 games his senior year. They just haven't been through enough games. So you certainly want a guy who's played a lot of games, and he's done that.
Coach, back to the passing. I know it sounds strange, but I think about goaltenders in hockey. You adjust from the big ice in Europe and coming back. How much of an adjustment is the big field, I guess, in some of the angles you're using when you're throwing as a quarterback?
Yeah, certainly the quarterbacks really have to understand the width of the field. And I think when they get up here, they're like, oh, my God. Like, the field hitch turns into a 35 to 45-yard throw. So they have to, every year you'll see a young quarterback gets an opportunity, throws the ball to the field late, and all of a sudden it's a pick six. So they kind of have to understand the width of the field, the depth of the end zones, and how defenses are going to try to attack you.
With Red Blacks head coach Paul Lapolis, there's still quite a few games to go in this season, coach, and we'll see what happens as far as wins and losses and the playoff chase, etc. Would it be your goal, though, regardless of where you're at in terms of that stuff, to get him into some games? He's here, you know, he's got a 3-year deal, so he's here for 2 more years to make sure he gets some game experience this season.
Yeah, I'm not really concerned about that right now. I'm just concerned to, you know, trying to get a win this week, and we have another young quarterback that can be on the roster that we can start to look at and develop. That's part of the process more than all of a sudden playing the guy.
He certainly looks like, the off-field stuff, like a lot of fun. Like he'd be a guy that players would gravitate toward. Do you have any thoughts on in terms of that, just the duck calling and that part of the persona? As to whether, you know, that in terms of team bonding, team building, et cetera, can be a real positive thing?
Yeah, I don't know too much about his personal background and on the duck calling and stuff. But, you know, I do know part of the leadership of a quarterback is his players got to believe in him. His players got to relate to him. And players have to, you know, have to believe in that person. So, but part of that process is, being comfortable with everybody on the team.
Coach, how nice is it just for Marcel and I guess yourself, but just to get some new bodies in and just some fresh looks and create a little competition?
Well, you know, it's from an injury standpoint. So a lot of these, because of the 7-day quarantine for everybody coming up, you know, these decisions were made even before the BC game because we had a bunch of guys who were injured and certain even practice squad guys who could have bumped up to the roster got injured. So that's kind of how we had to get some guys into the building and make sure we had, you know, enough depth because we've got a lot of guys that are on even 6-game injured or the 1-game injured that, if we had one more injury, we wouldn't have somebody to be able to, you know, replace a starter. So that's kind of what this process has been. So it's been good to get some people up.
I'm going to get a little technical on you, but is the quarantine portion for 7 days based on players that are not vaxxed or is it just anyone come from the U.S.?
It's a U.S., people coming up from the U.S.
All right. You brought in the players you signed or were announced at least last Monday. A vast majority of them are receivers, including one with a lot of CFL experience in Kenny Stafford. What are your hopes for what he can bring to the table for the Red Blacks?
Well, just to have an understanding of, you know, most CFL teams run similar concepts. And having somebody who probably knows, probably half the concepts, just has to hear the terminology again. Kenny actually did a training camp with me a couple of years ago, so he's familiar with some aspects of the system. Just somebody who understands the waggle, understands the sit in zone and man, and, you know, besides a young person who's never, you know, who's never been in the Canadian Football League, they got to figure out the waggle, they got to figure out what concepts, you know, are and everything. So, you know, that gives you a more veteran guy.
All right, so the other kind of name player, in terms of name familiarity for people, those that watch the NFL and are maybe Cowboys fans, would be Terrence Williams, the receiver, who also came up 6 years in the NFL, coach. And I'll ask the same question we asked about you made about Duck Hodges and just a different game from a quarterback's point of view. What challenges does Williams face in terms of learning the game from a receiver's point of view?
Well, certainly understanding CFL concepts, first of all, understanding how to motion and move up here. It's a little different for receivers. How to use the waggle and attack the line of scrimmage will be something he has to start getting used to. And then just seeing the coverage pictures, how they're different up here than the U.S. So, yes, with him and a couple other guys we just brought in, we'll just start educating him about the game.
You had a chance to sit back, watch some games, and I'm sure Friday watching Calgary. Hamilton beats him 23-17. Thoughts on what you'll see on Wednesday, coach?
Offensively, you know, all three phases are as physical a team as you'll face. I think they do a really good job playing the game physical. They're very well coached. They prevent defensively. They'll play a number of different things, and offensively, you know, they find a way to win. They find a way to do things from a run game standpoint. And you know, they did a really good job last week, being able to run the football and stay in the game. And defensively, they were able to take over the game. So, they're a talented unit that we got to play our best game.
The good news is that the Western Division is kind of keeping you guys in it in the Eastern Division at 1-4. You're you're only about a game and a half out of a potential playoff position. Do you take any encouragement from that at all?
You know, as we tell our players, we just got to go win a game, and all that stuff takes care of itself. So let's go out and play a good game and, you know, play a three-phase game, play well offensively, defensively, special teams, and put ourselves in position to win this week. And then the records take care of itself. Nobody's really established themselves in the East.
Are you starting to see maybe a little cleaner football and teams starting to hit their rhythm, Coach, after getting some reps in?
Yeah, you know, I think all teams this year have had the scoring seems to be down in some ways, and I think if we're not first, we're one of the fewest penalized teams in the CFL. So I don't know if there's too many more penalties because everybody's had the year off or anything, but I do know it is interesting when some of the new guys come up, put it that way. Like, we had a couple of guys who've come up who haven't played. It's one thing if you've taken some time off. Some of these guys haven't played in 2 years, so they're not in the game shape they think they should be. So that's who we've got to get those guys in.
Coach, I wanted to end with this. You're probably familiar with the story from the weekend with the University of Ottawa GG's player, Francis Perron, who passed away shortly after their game against the U of T on Saturday. Won't you, ask you to comment specifically on that? But just, you know, we hear so much about how football is all about family and how close football teams are. Can you kind of take us into what it might be like for a football team to lose a player like the GGs have done?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you lose a member of your family, it's going to be difficult for the people and the people involved and trying to, and just sort out missing somebody so young. And it was something I had to go through in 2011 as the head coach of the Bombers that, our assistant head coach and defensive line coach, died in the building. I suffered a heart attack, and it just kind of destroyed our guys for two straight days. We had to play a game two days later, and anytime you lose somebody, football is a great game, with a lot of great relationships, and that's why you get so many people who want to continue to play this game. And so anytime relationships like that are formed, it's really difficult. So I'll reach out to Marcel Belfay when I get the opportunity this week and give our condolences as an organization to their loss.
All right. Well said. Appreciate your time, Coach. Best of luck in the game on Saturday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. There goes, and that would be Wednesday, not Saturday. I've lost track. Mm-hmm. I always think about football on the weekend.
Yeah.
Our thanks, Paul Appelese, for joining us. And yeah, that news that came out last night from the GGs, just a tragic, tragic story. Francis Perron is 25 years old, mechanical engineering student, fifth year. And passed away shortly after the game that they played on Saturday. Not a lot of detail has been put out there, nor do we really need to know the nuts and bolts of it. But you can imagine, as Coach said right there, right? Whenever anything happens, but when we're talking about university age football players, the impact on that team, first of all, they're just back playing for the first time in 2 years. You've just played a game and they lost the game, but that doesn't really matter. That happens shortly thereafter when they're still in Toronto. That happens. You can imagine what that must be like right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, and hard to comprehend, Jerry. You go in an absolute state of shock. And when you play contact sports, and I've seen some terrible injuries in my day, that in itself can be an incredible shock for teams. And what have we seen in the NHL are times where there's serious injury, they cancel games. When you are of that age, not that you don't see it once in a while, but you have no expectation that a young athlete that's extremely healthy is going to pass away. So shock is just it's beyond for the rest of that group to comprehend. Not to mention, as a fifth-year guy, the bond that you have with everybody on that team that's getting ready to graduate, at the same time, all the other underclassmen. I mean, it's absolutely devastating for the program and obviously for the family and everyone involved.
Francis Perron, a two-time U Sports academic, All-Canadian, 14 tackles, a sack, and a fumble in 2019, the last time they played football. And had a chance to celebrate as a defensive lineman. You don't get a lot of chances to celebrate in terms of having an impact on the bottom line of the football game when you score a touchdown. But he actually had a touchdown in the Panda game that Ottawa U won back in 2019. So our condolences certainly to his family, to his GG's family, and to everybody at the University of Ottawa. 8:29, we'll take a break and back with much more after this on Sports Radio TSN 1200. then I understand why you asked the question about Duck Hodges' vaccination, Simmer. And I understand the coach, for privacy reasons, you know, wants to, you know, doesn't want to reveal anything more than he needs to reveal. But I think we all know that the reason that he's in quarantine is he's unvaccinated.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. The rules keep changing all the time, Jared. That's why when he said a week, I'm like, well, Lord, he just told me that Tkachuk could come right into camp. Yeah. So I want to get to the bottom of that. And I was texting him as well. And just, yeah, because it, yeah, I get, just staying updated. I wasn't even, I thought of that in the question, which was just more of.
And we've asked the coach at various times about, you know, because they have the goal is the 85% of the team being vaccinated, you know, does in terms of if games ever have to be forfeited, not played or whatever, you still get paid. And the goal was to get to the 85% number. And my understanding is that the Red Blacks have now gotten to that number. And don't forget, when we had Marcel Desjardins on a few weeks ago, when he was talking about, you know, adding players, bringing players in, one of the things that he said, if there's a tie in talent, one of the things we ask is, are you vaccinated? Because, you know, that can be the tipping point potentially, because one of the big things is, again, to keep that overall roster has to be at least 85% vaccinated to enable them to get their money, as it were. So I think I can appreciate why the coach said what he said, but I think we can read between the lines and know that that's the reason Duck Hodges be practicing his duck calling in the hole in his hotel room for the next 7 days.
No, not even feeling that, Jer. I think he's got the old Nintendo. He's just doing duck hunting right in the.
That's a world champion right there, friends. Right there. And a duck just crashed into our big picture window
my
here
God.
At the studio.
He probably just, this is the thing. Forget about hunting, Jer. They're probably flying right into his hotel room. Just open up the window. But I think he's got the Nintendo going. And what he does when he's duck hunting, though, probably behind the couch, pretending he's in his little, what did Griby used to go, what are those things, like the tree stand?
Blind?
Duck blind.
What's that?
His blind.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you do? What are you hunting when you're up in the stand there? Griby used to sit
deer.
In the stand. Oh,
that's usually...
Well, no, but Griba was a duck guy, was he not?
Yep. Yeah, Griba was a duck
but
guy.
But I used to always show him up in his stand, so he must have been into deer season. So, yeah, I think he's just right in there getting a little practice in, and must be weird, too, because typical for Americans, probably thinking trying to order food is more difficult here. I always find it funny. What was the raptor last year was really upset about the bagged milk? Remember that? Like, all these little things. And we're the same when we go to other countries. You're trying to adjust to the different little things that you're going to see here versus other places.
I think we saw Mike Fisher a lot in those elevated blinds, and that was more for deer, and that was with his bow and arrow.
Mm.
That's what he would be doing.
I don't
up there
like.
I'd like to
towers.
See the deer get the same advantage of having their own blind. Actually, with the
I don't know.
To
I don't.
I
don't know about this bow and arrow. I don't know about this bow and arrow thing, guys. Either. Like, I think it'd be hard enough to shoot one of these fellas, but going in with a bow and arrow.
I think
arrow,
the three of us are probably not the right people to be asking.
Yeah.
About taking down an animal.
No. I'm not. I can take down a fish. But as far as other animals,
yeah, it's not
but,
an animal.
But can you fillet it and eat it? Like, can you survive if you had to right now survive on just fishing? Or are you
what
eating
do you mean?
Bones, choking on a bone, and then you're dead, and then you're done. You're toast.
What are you talking about?
Like, you just can't fish. You need to know how to clean the
fish. Oh, God, hammer it. No, but anybody knows how to do that. Come on.
I don't know. That's an
what?
Art form.
Oh, well, first of all, we never really debone it, but it's not that hard, Jer. Or what you really do if you're getting greedy, no matter the fish, you just take a fillet off the top and avoid all the bones. I thought you meant on an animal. I've been curious when they take down the big animals. For the fellow that has to cut the thing up and bag it, I don't know how you eat it after. That would be the part for me, because there's no smell on my TV. I just don't feel like the smell inside of the animal is all that nice when you're having to finish that and making sure that Mr. Bear is not ready to come and pounce on
Mr.
you.
Mr. Bear.
As you're cutting this thing
Mr.
up.
Mr.
Bear.
Well,
I don't. Mrs. Bear, whoever's hungry for you.
Just go with Bear.
Whoever's hungry for you at this point.
Boo-boo. I'm going to pick a Nick Basket. Okay, so, but back to the Duck Hodges discussion.
Yeah.
That was very much a coach who... is tempering enthusiasm very much on, well, and listen, I think every Red Blacks fan out there is looking for anything, any means of encouragement for what has been a very, very slow start to this season. The thought was, man, that guy's going to come up here, put him in right away. It is a uniquely different game,
yeah.
And I think It did sound like he'll get in, but we're going to see him later rather than sooner.
Yeah, I'm still.
I know you're holding true.
Two more crapola games from these guys, and you got no chance here. But I know what you're saying. Don't force him. Don't put him in a position. But holy moly, as you start to run out of some track here and wanting to, but I could only imagine. And one thing I would assume, and I've never played quarterback other than a little in the field. When guys roll out, your ability, JR, to hit a target when it's moving, I don't know if we ever appreciate that enough, but in the CFL, when you look at these darn fields, and when he was talking about the pass, was he talking basically about the lateral throw you have to make?
Well, the out. The far side of the field.
And unfortunately, when a guy doesn't have an arm, you're like, okay, it appears that ball is taking about an hour to get to the person, and by then he's already tackled.
Yeah,
just all the adjustments to the angles of trying to get comfortable, but I just love the fact that the guy wants to be here. Like I said, that to me is such a big part of it, and we'll see where it goes, but I'm going to predict that not this game, not the next game, but the following game, we're going to see some duck action.
Okay. All right. He's cutting my grass, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's fine.
You okay
gotta come
with
up.
That?
No, he's got to come up with a handle, but he doesn't have a handle, so come up with a handle, and then we'll go from there. Okay. There's no El Predicto. Yeah. El Predicto! What was my other persona? I've forgotten now.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Johnstradamus. Johnstradamus. You can rock me, Johnstradamus.
I like that one better. More of a flow. Maybe we can just go back to playing the simmer at 7. And hey, simmer down. Yeah. Hey?
Simmer, simmering. There we go. Red Blacks, Hamilton. Yeah. Wednesday night from TD Play, 7:30, by the way. There'll be the kickoff. Here on TSN 1200, Red Blacks 1-4. They're only 3-3 leads the division, kids. So if they can somehow, some way, squeeze out a win over Hamilton at home on Wednesday night, they are suddenly one win away from being potentially tied for top spot.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't seem like that will happen, and I know it's a stretch. But they're getting some help from the Western Division as Toronto and Montreal both lost on the weekend. So
I think just as a program as well, JR, you also in a 14-game season, if you end up 1-6, right, you keep talking about, hey, we're only a couple, 3 games out, then you just starting to look at, and you kind of set the tone there and got all coach fired up when at 1-2 you reference the 3-15 season. I think even the most optimistic fan feels like it's trending more towards that type of year. So lose a couple more, man, and she's going to get tough.
Dennis in Hindenburg has texted us and said, gents, I drove up to the Sioux this weekend to fish the salmon run along Lake Superior. I met the owner of the Greyhounds, who just opened up a great brewery. And I said, I'm from Ottawa, and I often listen to Simmer stories about the Sioux. And he laughed and said, Simmer was a wild dude and told me some great stories. P.S. That's a cool city, beautiful spot, and a sweet arena. That's from Dennis in Hindenburg.
A wild dude. Trying to remember.
So the owner of the Sioux has been the owner since you were there
35 years
ago?
No. First of all, when I owned Angie Bumbaco.
Yes. Who passed away, right?
Recently, though, right? Yeah. Angie scouted forever. Always a great story, JR, because we'd go to Angie's store, which was called Bumbaco Sports downtown, and we would get all our Sioux Greyhounds gear, and we would all get it on pay later,
which means pay never?
Well, when Angie would be there, and then his son would see us come in, and they would try to get Angie out of the store because he'd give everything away. So then all of a sudden in your stall at the rink, we'd start getting notices from them. Still my favorite one today is I got a card and it said, how would you like if we owed you money and had a sad face? I just thought that was...
The upside down frowny face,
yeah,
that one?
Yeah. Like, I just, for whatever reason, just resonated with me. Like, they know exactly who we are. Your dad owns the team. But it went from Angie, and then Phil Esposito bought it with Angie, and then they were the owners, and a group had owned it for a long time. And as far as the owner now, and saying I'm a bit of a wild dude, what is also wild, I don't know how often this happens, but my first year, 1985, JR, of the 3 years I was there, that was the only year the salmon run that ran. I don't know how often it happens.
According to Dennis, he drove all the way up there this week.
Well, I don't know.
Hopefully it was, in his case, it was.
No, it was, but I'm just saying I don't think it's annual. That was quite a spectacle. I'd never seen that in my life, right? And at that point, a lot of them were very much dying, but
yes.
they would come all through kind of the, you know, the port area and come through, you know, they'd swim up one lane of where you'd be docking the boats and another, and God, there were just literally thousands of them. And then all of a sudden they'd end up on the shore of the Sioux as well.
Yeah, and they'd be down there with the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Well, yeah. that's right across. You gotta go. You gotta.
All say she to me, to wait fish baby, yeah. put 15 more miles behind her.
Nice, nice. Yeah. I'm actually thinking of, now when you say that, is it Grand Rapids or Traverse City that has a memorial for the ship? So it would have been right off of the coast there. But anyways, yeah, great, great.
Northern Michigan, right?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
All right. So there we go. There's our, thank you, Dennis, for that keen insight. That's a long way to go fish.
Yeah, it is about a 9-hour ride. And it is a gorgeous part of the country and tremendous Italian food, very strong Italian mafia. Some nice border trading going on up there.
What?
And, yeah. Well, you can't.
In the Sioux?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you just say people of ill repute?
Oh, no, because they're good people. But it doesn't matter. But anyways, really, really good Italian.
They're good
food
to you.
Yes, yeah. And I have heard nothing. I've never been to the Sioux.
Yeah,
I've heard nothing but good things about the SR Center. I believe it's called the
rink
up in the Sioux.
I played in the old Sioux Gardens. It was the what would we categorize that as, a dump, I guess you'd call it. It was not much of a place on good old Queen Street, which I think every city in Canada has a Queen Street where the rink is at. But some great memories back in the day.
All right, 8:47. We're going to get some NFL talk after 9. Duke Ellington will join us with his thoughts on Week 2, which wraps up tonight with the Packers and the Lions. Hopefully a competitive game. Be a stretch to say it could match last night's Sunday nighter. That was a great game between the Ravens and the Chiefs. Big comeback win for Baltimore. Huge win. This text comes in from Joel. Says, I blame Brady Tkachuk not being signed on Big Red.
Wow. What happened there?
He just says because, and I agree with that. I saw Big Red here. He was here last week. He's been doing a lot more work here lately. You know, when we think about it, like, what's making sense here? Brady Tkachuk remains unsigned. What's gone hand in glove with that? Big Red has taken on a bigger role here at the radio station. Back to his days, not being able with the draft lottery getting that done. That's 18 months ago now.
He got fired from that.
And going away from being an intern because of the pandemic, then coming back, starting to work here, and now Tkachuk is unsigned. Joel, I'm backing you 100% on that one.
Great points by you, Joel.
Yep, way to go. I'm trying to back your man, Big Red.
No, I'm not on point.
We're looking for
a
scapegoat. This is all about scapegoating. And Big Red's as good a scapegoat as anybody.
Because look at the run the Blue Jays have been on since Big Red's been back. Boom. That's been a positive note.
Jays don't count. Not everybody's a fan of the Jays. All right, 8:48. We're going to come back. We'll get you a bit latest on the Sens situation. Again, rookie prospect game this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Then some of them will get the invite to main camp, which starts on Wednesday. Will number 7 be there for the Sens? We'll come back. We'll get you the very latest on that when we return here on this Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. We're glad you're with us right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Hammer with you, Duke Ellington. We'll talk NFL with us coming up after 9 o'clock this morning. So the Sens have their rookie prospect game this afternoon. Sorry, their prospect game. It's not rookies. They're not all rookies. Prospect game this afternoon versus Montreal at Brossard, the Habs practice facility, at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And then after that, that's it for rookie camp. And not sure how many of them will end up getting invited to main camp. Simmer, you were there on Saturday. You saw some of them will go back to, some of them are just camp invitees. Some of them are draft picks who will get invited for sure, but some of them, presumably, just to keep the body count down, probably will just be sent back to junior, I'm guessing. After this week.
And I also wonder, just in a calendar like this, JR, even in the case of Greg, I guess you give him a bit of camp and a game, but for guys that are the junior, now junior's starting a little bit later this year, right?
Correct.
So, you know, but hey, I wouldn't be surprised in the way the Sens are at wanting to get off to a fast start. If you're not under a professional contract and you're not a high pick, hey, get to junior and get going. You know, for a guy like Mr. Rogers, who didn't play last year in London, hanging around camp's not going to do anything. Get down to London and get rocking and rolling.
How did Ben Roger look?
I thought he was just a big guy. He's a space eater. He's long, JR, very long. But I didn't watch enough of him. Mr. Romeo, he served up a nice piece of sauce to start the game and then seemed to settle
in
pretty
good. In a good way?
The sauce is
nice
on the
pizza.
Other team.
I got
you.
Yeah, he
served it up. I watched Thompson a fair amount as well.
Uh-huh.
You know who he reminds me of, who you're very familiar with?
Yes.
Sammy Lapisto. Remember Sammy?
he sounds like I need a fin to win. No, I don't know him.
He played a little in the NHL, but Sammy was a bit undersized, but pretty dynamic and could never quite crack it with the Caps. And I'm kind of interested to see what his uses a short shooting stick as well. Not a fan of that, JR, unless you're Sergei Gonchar. If you're running my power play and you want to do a bit of that, that's okay.
Troy Mann has said, the Belleville coach, that he believes that Lassie Thompson is a longer-term project. We often get to, it's all first rounder. He should be in the NHL sooner rather than later. Some guys, especially defensemen, will take a little bit longer for whatever reason. And then he has been pretty consistently saying that this is not a guy that's going to fast track to the NHL.
And I agree. Even watching Bernard Docker, as I said, for the style he plays and where he's at, just going to have to become a man. In the case of Lassie Thompson, he's not a super dynamic player, but you can see he can skate, appears to have a decent IQ, has some of the abilities. So yeah, once he fills out, as long as he is taught to defend and play properly, I could see in today's National Hockey League where he could have a player for sure.
So of everybody that played for the Sens on Saturday, is Shane Pinto the only one who's going to get, in your opinion, an extra long look, has a chance to make the team?
I would say so. You know, I look on the back end and JBD, if he comes into camp and performs well, but I think they've looked and said, hey, big pitcher.
They got eight guys already.
Yeah, exactly. I think of that as you go down the lineup, though, and again, back to center ice and kind of filling out the forwards. Would not be surprised if Pinto does well, and if he doesn't, you get short pretty quickly. I wonder if Kastelic I'm already confused myself, Jer. What are we going with? Kastelic. I could see him getting a fourth line look with a Watson and somebody else on the wing. Those would be my two guys to keep an eye on.
All right, so there we go. Camp begins again on Wednesday. We'll get to the Brady Tkachuk thing in just a second, but Logan Brown, we know, will be there. He was signed on the weekend. Simmer broke the news on that Saturday afternoon that Logan Brown signed a one-year, two-way contract. But again, what's changed for Logan this year as opposed to any other year he's been here, he now needs waivers to be sent down to the minors. So if he does not crack the Sens lineup this year, and they don't or this camp, and they don't end up trading him, he would have to go through waivers. And presumably, given even just his draft pedigree, and I know we're 6 years on now, I would think that some lower echelon team, you've mentioned Arizona, seems like a prime example. Although they brought in a million guys this year to finish out their contracts. I don't know how much room they actually have, but they might be a prime candidate if it were to get to that. But this is, you know, if he's been feeling like in the past that maybe the organization has shortchanged him on opportunity, and well, you can still send him down. This year, they can still send him down, but now the rest of the NHL will have a voice in whether Logan Brown plays in the NHL or not.
Yeah, and it becomes a big piece of humble pie. Now, you'd say to yourself, well, if somebody wants him, why wouldn't they make a trade? I don't know what the ask is, but I don't think there's a market, JR. Now get to camp, and if he plays, I think it's all going to be earned. I don't think it's going to be handed. Does somebody gain more interest? Possibly, but on a two-way contract of 700 over 100, if nobody at this point is willing to take a flyer on you, JR, it's a huge piece of humble pie to all of a sudden be waived. So we'll see. And I'll say big picture, and it's hard to sell to a 22-year-old. There was some talk about him going to Europe. If I was handling him or representing him, I would have just said to him at this point, you know what, go and play a full year in Europe, get healthy, work on your skating, your reps, and then let's see where you're at a year from now. Not saying he can't do it in the American Hockey League, but I think that would have been perfect for him.
Since Pierre McGuire guested on our prospect broadcast on Saturday during the second intermission, weighed in on the Brady Tkachuk thing, said there's no acrimony, but on Logan Brown, here was what the contract means for the Sens and him.
Gives him an opportunity to establish himself as a professional hockey player.
Yeah.
Some of it's been really good for him, and some of it hasn't. And some of it, for me, has been watching from afar, and injuries have obviously played a little bit of a role in his lack of development. He's as talented as a kid you're going to see.
For sure.
But he has to decide how hard he wants to work, and I think that's the message from all young players. They all think they're working hard until they get into an NHL situation, and they find out, I wasn't working as hard as that guy. So it's a job, and you have to learn how to do the job, and I think that's the phase he's in right now.
Are you working hard or hardly working? That's the question Logan Brown will have to answer at a training camp, but he's going to be given an opportunity. Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question: what's your prediction for Logan Brown's future with the Sens? Number one center, fringe NHLer, waivers, playing for Bingham, Belleville, etc. And 52% of you say
fringe NHLer, so kind of down in the lineup NHL guy. 41% say waivers, Belleville bound. Just 7% see him as a future number one center.
Yeah, also it'd be interesting, Jarher. And again, we'll see when he gets to camp. There's opportunity. There's spots open. Also a player, I'd look at a guy like Cruikshank, who probably, depending on Tkachuk's situation, get some looks. They don't have a lot of depth. But in Logan Brown, if he is waived, I do wonder at that point where then it is really more of, hey, find out another decent minor league player or prospect that's kind of gone through this whole thing, and do we see him flipped out in a trade? I think that's a possibility.
I want to, I don't know if it's a web poll question because I don't think they're well enough known,
yeah.
But I'd like to ask at some point, who's got better punch-in-the-face ability? You brought up this Cruikshank fella or Parker Kelly. I mean, the Sens are gathering these small little shift-disturbing guys that would appear to be goading other teams into punching them in the face.
My vote right now is Cruikshank. My God, was he getting in the middle of everything on Saturday.
We got to change his name, though, because I had a local guy by the name of Curtis Cruikshank, who's a goaltender who lives here. And we always, Glennie Hanlon and I had a nick for him. It was Shaft Crank, or what would we call
Shaft
him? Or Crook, I don't know. We ended
Crooked
up,
Shank?
No, I know. We just always had a fun nickname for him. And this guy here, I do appreciate that, and I like the feisty guys, but the little guys that kind of get face washed and punched around, also for the people that are on the ice with them, they're usually the ones that are getting tuned in, because that particular fella there, and this is where activity and achievement, I don't mind you stirring it up once in a while, but I also don't want to see a whole feast of these little guys just running around.
Well, he did, to his credit, he put up 16 points in 19 games
for
Belleville.
I agree.
He obviously
I
has
agree.
A little bit of ability in addition to the punch in the face ability.
Yeah, and it was Cruikshank that we ended up calling him.
Cruikshank.
Yeah, but he ended up having nice numbers at UNH as well.
Yes.
He has realized that there's probably a spot lower in the lineup, and this is something that DJ Smith is looking for.
All right. Tell you what, we're just past 9 o'clock. Let's save the Brady Tkachuk discussion for after Duke, so we'll get back on the clock, get back on time. So we'll take a break, get you the latest news, and run down the scoreboard for you. We'll talk some NFL with Duke Ellington, wrap up week two. Some interesting storylines from yesterday, including quarterback injuries. Four of them knocked out of games yesterday, and at least some, if not all four of them, potentially out for a period of time. So we'll go through all of that with Duke Ellington. We'll get into the Brady Tkachuk situation as it sits here this morning at 9 o'clock on a Monday. With camp set to open Wednesday, Brady Tkachuk remains unsigned, one of nine restricted free agents around the National Hockey League who does not have a contract yet, just 2 to 3 days away from the start of main training camp. Will it all change? We'll let you know right here on TSN 1200. All right, we'll take a break, come back with Hour 4, which will include another code word in our Red Blacks Jersey Monday contest, that and much more as we continue along here on a nice, sunny election day Monday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200.